It's showtime.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! In case you're wondering, this program is live. It is the 14th day of August 2017. This is the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is, in fact, where we live. And I'm back. Yep, gone for a week. Not gone long enough. And, of course, I can't turn my back on the country for a minute without it getting into some sort of god-awful bloody mischief. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and this really is The Horn, this really is live programming, and you really can participate in the multimedia madcap real-time wacky zany extravaganza that happens in The Horn chat room by going over to headonradionetwork.com and clicking on chat room, picking out a screen name and a password, and jumping into the conversation. You will be met by Anatole and Hoghead and Laborman and Silent R. Lamar and Ralphs and VT Blom. All capably moderated by midweek and not-so-midweek utility and semi-permanent chat room moderator, all-around great guy, Steve from Georgistan. Thank you, Ralphs. We had a nice getaway. It was harried, but, you know. Right. Yeah. We got a little away time, got some family time, got to see the ocean for a little bit. It was a nice break. I'm planning a better one. Yeah, there we go. Steve in New York says, I couldn't resist. Bob Kincaid, untanned, rested, and ready. I'll have you note, I managed to not come back looking like Captain Christopher Pike. Beep, 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 beep. Nope. I managed to get a healthy glow on, but thanks to something that our buddy Randy in PA did for me back at the Christmas season, I am happily unburnt. Yes, the Patagonia SPF 50 Tropic Comfort Sun Hoodie works real, real good. That, by the way, is an unpaid product placement. I'm trying to be as chipper and upbeat as I possibly can because it's, well, you know what's going on and you know what we've got to talk about. Hell, it would have been weird enough just coming back and talking about whether or not we were going to have World War III. But it turns out that some little goose-stepping assholes would like to start the American Civil War, part deux, before we can get our World War III on. So we will be talking about that. Now, stuff applies. This is a listener-supported conversation radio broadcast. And I can say for certain that we have no advertisers. We have nothing but listener support. And we're right back at it. We've got fundraising to do tonight and every night until such time as we get a total of 400 people subscribed to supporting The Horn, and you know, we're somewhere around 340 to go, and we've got the whole subscription campaign going over at Patreon, patreon.com/Bob Kincaid. In the meantime, we need to raise $400 tonight. No, that's not the new fundraising goal, because then this is going to bum you out. It bums me out, but I can't get around it. My daughter's divorce hearing is tomorrow, and consequently, I have to be away from here. Well, there's just not a much. There's not much of a chance of me getting back here in time to be behind the mic. If I do, I'll be here. But if I don't, I won't, because this is one of those family moments, and this really is family stuff. And I tell you this because, you know, well, we call ourselves a family community congregation, and I want you to know why. So I'd say there's about a 90% likelihood of no program tomorrow night, but then we will return to a normal programming schedule thereafter, all right? So with no program tomorrow night, we need to raise tonight and tomorrow night, and that's $400. That's 10 at 40, 40 at 10, 1 at 400, 2 at 4, 2 at 200, 4 at 100, 8 at 50, 16 at 25, 32 at 1250, and 64 at 6 and a quarter, and 128. At $3.13, and we'll round that up and apply it to the hangar payment for the Gulfstream 5. Can we do that? I honestly don't know, but I sure hope we can. I tried to get it started over the weekend on Facebook and Twitter, but it just was a bust. But thank you to the couple of people who did respond. Thank you very, very much. And thank you, as always, ongoing to our handful of the merry band of subscribers. That makes matters a lot less dire than they would be this evening. So that's, you know, go over to headonradionetwork.com, click on Contribute, fill in the very few brief little fields, put in whatever you feel appropriate. You know, if you don't like Patreon, Mr. Soros, just, you know, use the PayPal thing. It's okay. Put in $10,000 and we're good. And just click the little box that says make this a recurring monthly donation. We'll be fine. Now, here's the good news. Thanks to Dr. John and thanks to Tom in the Bay Area, we have challenges on the table that make that $400 fundraising goal a lot more approachable. Tom sent me a note earlier saying, I hope you were mostly able to keep yourself away from the news. I imagine the weekend's events in Charlottesville might have occasioned an emergency broadcast if they'd been during the week. And, yeah, I was on the road. Bootlegstegen, not pull Frazelek and Nazis. God bless it. But no. Hell, the whole the let's nuke North Korea thing with the toddler in chief had me pretty well worked up during the week. But I was trying not to work. I still broke my, I broke my promise. I did, because we were standing on we were standing on the side of the Battle of New Orleans, and the phone rang, and it was MSNBC, and you know I don't turn them down. So we from New Orleans, I had a little chat with Chris Hayes on Wednesday evening. So yeah, that okay. So here in a few minutes, if everything goes according to plan, because we do have to talk about what happened in Charlottesville, and because it is deserving of deeper analysis and a deeper attempt to understand than probably anything the for-profit media are doing, here in a couple of minutes, a dear friend of mine from years past, David Nywert, will join us in conversation. And David is, of course, the foremost authority in the entire United States on right-wing hate and right-wing hate groups. And I'm hoping that we can get some insight into how and why Charlottesville happened, whether this is a high water mark or merely an opening salvo, that sort of thing. David has been documenting this sort of thing for rather a long time, going all the way back to the Illuminationists, how hate talk radicalized the American right. That was 2009. He also has a new book called Alt America, The Rise of the Radical Right in the Age of Trump. And that that book you can get on Kindle, you can get it at you can get it at Amazon and a number of various other booksellers of your preference. And so I'm very, very pleased at this point to welcome back to the program David. We've talked with David before in the past. David Nywert. Hey, David, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well. A little jet lagged, but I'm hanging in there.
And sort of, do you feel a little sort of discombobulated just watching the stuff from Charlotte?
I'm sorry. I've been in the midst of too much of this stuff myself. It's looking awfully familiar to me because I've covered a number of these things, and I was afraid it was, it was building up to this, and it certainly has done that.
Well, there are probably 1,000 different directions in which you and I could go right off the bat, and maybe we'll tangentialize over to a few of them as we go. But let's start with the premise that you raised. This has been a long time coming. Can you provide some context on that?
Sure. Well, so I have a book coming out this fall. it's titled Alt America, The Rise of the Radical Right in the Age of Trump. And it's basically a history of kind of how we got here and into this mess. And it really goes back, in my estimation, to the 1990s and somewhat before. But really, I kind of kicked the history off in the 90s with the arrival of the Patriot Militia Movement. And, and I'm telling people, basically what happened back then, and as I wrote in my first book on the militia movement in 1999, they create this alternative universe for themselves, a sort of epistemological bubble where they can believe that up is down and right is wrong and whatever else they want to do to fit the narrative that they've already decided they want to have. And so these folks kind of live in this alternative universe and they believe all this stuff that's not true. So there's been a huge amount of that that's been growing. And really it took off in the 2008, 2009 with the arrival of it was Barack Obama's candidacy and then the reaction to it. And ultimately, this grew into the Tea Party, which became this huge conduit for reviving the Patriot movement, the militia movement. And that's when we really saw this alternative universe just take off. And, of course, it's been fueled all along by Alex Jones and his conspiracy theories, things like that. And, coming to roost in manifesting itself in places like the Bundy Ranch and the Malheur National Wildlife Refuge, and then really finally manifesting itself in this new movement, the alt-right.
Do you, David, have any confidence in the bromides being pronounced, say, by U.S. Attorney General Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III, that they're going to use our hate crime statutes, and it seems to fit into our definition of domestic terrorism? It was almost like he was surprised when he said, "Son of a gun, white people, domestic terrorism. Who knew?" Do you have any confidence there's going to be any dialing back of this?
No.
Well, I kind of expected that to be the answer.
Not at all. Absolutely not. No, these people have mostly shown a record of winking and nodding and pretending that these guys don't exist.
Well, wasn't that Trump's? I mean, wasn't today with Trump? Wasn't that one of those nod and a wink things? David Duke seemed to think it was. He said, only a dumb person would believe that Trump was sincere today. And, you know, I tend to, and you know, I feel like I have to shower with bleach now, but I tend to agree with David Duke on that.
No, Duke's not inastute. He's just sometimes an outright liar, but he's, you know, sometimes he makes keen observations. You know, his tweet the other day about it was also rather astute if you read it the right way. But, you know, telling Trump to look in the mirror and realize who elected him. I kind of concurred with that one too. So yeah, no.
That'll be a bleach shower for two, Garcon.
Yeah.
I mean, not that you know, but it's hard to think that. You can't just dial back Nazism, can you?
Well, no, not once you've it's a Pandora's box. Once you've unleashed it, there's no putting that thing back in the box. What clearly has to happen is that the rest of us have to take on the job of dealing with this phenomenon and confronting it adequately. Honestly, I think a lot of this, I don't think this can happen from the top down. And even if it were Hillary Clinton or President Obama in these shoes, or holding the presidency, I would be skeptical, really, ultimately, of any kind of top-down approach, other than applying the levers of law enforcement in an adequate fashion. You know, and that has to happen from the bottom up, too. We have to have the police forces in this country realize that, no, I'm sorry, you know, while Antifa people can be really stupid about the use of violence, they are not in any way equivalent to these neo-Nazis and what those people want and what they plan for their fellow Americans and how American they really are, because they are not. They're not American. They are antipathetic to democracy and democratic institutions as anyone can be. And they are also antipathetic to police, though they'll give them lip service. So the cops better wake up and recognize, because I've been seeing, you know, I've been covering a lot of these rallies, and you know, I got to say the police behavior at these alt-right events is very troubling to me, because they clearly see the Antifa people as the real problem and not these right-wing alt-right provocateurs who are coming.
Oh, isn't that the origin or some of this the origin of this most recent trouble? The fact that the cops basically ran away.
Yeah. Well, they certainly ignored apparently that man who was beaten in the parking garage. So yeah,
I mean, I've got a story here in front of me right now, and I think it's fair to ask to what extent American Nazism has infiltrated things like law enforcement. After all, the Three Percenters, the Oath Keepers, they all claim to be inside law enforcement. I remember the one police officer who was killed in Dallas last year was later found, you know, he had neo-Nazi white supremacist symbology tattooed all over him, literally.
Yeah, yeah.
And so now I've got a story in front.
Right. We don't know the extent of that, but it is happening. It's really hard to tell. Probably there should be a lot more internal investigation going on in that regard. But, it's a problem. It's also a problem inside the military. And so, yeah, and really the one problem that I can talk about it at some length is the extent to which the nation's sheriffs and deputies have been roped into these extremist belief systems through the use of these constitutionalists, the so-called Constitutionalist Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association, run by Sheriff Mack, and there he claims to have members in every state, and I believe he's right. And I believe a number, you know, we certainly saw this CSPOA come into play at the Malheur. So, yeah, we've got these radicalized law enforcement officers, and they're clearly sympathetic to the alt-righters and the three percenters and the militiamen out there protesting against the supposedly violent left, when, in fact, they're out there deliberately trying to provoke a fight with the so-called violent left. And, you know, they're creating these fights and creating these situations where they're trying, clearly itching for a fight. And sometimes, as I saw in Berkeley in April, they get it, you know, and sometimes, but lately, I think the far left, you know, the Antifa people are figuring out that they're being trolled. And, certainly the event we had Saturday in Seattle, where they had an alt-right event, or I'm sorry, Sunday in Seattle, just yesterday, where they had an alt-right event, the Antifa people didn't respond violently at all. And I think that's smart.
Well, I think it is as well. Like I said, I'm looking at a story here as far as Springfield, Massachusetts police officer posting, ha ha ha, love this, maybe people shouldn't block roads, about the terrorism by car that took place in Charlottesville. It's all very it's not disconcerting. Dave, it's terrifying, because you don't know where it's going to pop up next, but the potential, I mean, I guess it's kind of a It fits into some of those of us on the progressive left. It fits into our paradigm of what the rise of American fascism looks like, that it happened in Virginia, and it happened with its centerpiece being a damnable statue of Robert E. Lee. But as you pointed out, Berkeley, Malheur in Oregon, the Bundy Ranch in Nevada, this stuff is national, isn't it? And what I'm asking you secondarily to this is, to what extent has right wing media played a role in nationalizing this stuff?
Oh, it's played a critical role, you know, especially in the way that, like, Fox News will help propagate some of these nonsensical conspiracy theories, and the way that they will wink and nod at the racial games playing, you know, and they put on David Clark, who is a CSPOA hero, and pretend that he's just a normal guy. And, you know, of course, he's black, so hey, that way, you know, he's a twofer for Fox News, because then he's a black guy who will attack Black Lives Matter and other black figures, and that way they can avoid the charges of racism, right? So they really love Clark. But, you know, and it's that kind of stuff that goes on all the time. And, of course, Rush Limbaugh has been promoting this stuff since the 1990s. And there's always this undercurrent of racial antipathy and fear that white men are losing their privilege. That's been a theme that's run through Fox News and Rush Limbaugh since they started in the 90s. And they just kept playing that tune even during the Bush years. So,
I go back to 2009, David, when right after taking office, right after Obama took office, the Justice Department released a report that had been commissioned under the W administration that outlined the profound threat that America faced from right-wing domestic terrorism. There was such a furor from Fox and the institutional right that the Justice Department was forced to retract that, when in fact, and I know you read it, every word in it was true. So as a consequence of that, that was like putting fertilizer on the noxious little weed, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, not only that, right. I mean, the really nasty side effect of that particular controversy was that it really normalized extremism on the, you know, among mainstream conservatives, because they identified, they suddenly found themselves identifying with, you know, very radical groups. And, you know, that was, to me, one of the really nasty side effects. As it, you know, as it happens, Bob, I was just at Netroots Nation in Atlanta, and I had a panel there on the white face of domestic terrorism. I held it Saturday afternoon at 3:00, just apparently before this car went plowing through the crowd. But in it, I laid out the database that we created that demonstrated quite clearly that, you know, there's almost a 2-to-1 ratio of domestic terrorist acts carried out by right-wing extremists compared to radical Islamists. There's also a huge disparity in the numbers of the percentages of those incidents that involve fatalities. And there's also a huge disparity in the way those cases are handled by law enforcement. As you can imagine, the law enforcement is all over those Islamist cases, but the right-wing extremist cases get treated with kid gloves. And I did a report for Reveal News in June that laid all this out. And, you know, and that was sort of the basis of the panel that I had. And as that happens, I had on as one of my co-panelists the gentleman who is the author of that DHS bulletin. His name is Daryl Johnson. He runs an outfit in Washington, D.C. now called DT Analytics. And he retired from DHS in the wake of that controversy, and now runs his own analytics consultancy. And his department was reduced from about a 5-man, very small department, to one person, after he was basically similarly mostly shown the door by his fellow, by his superiors at DHS. So and Daryl's a great guy, you know, and it's hilarious because the guy is, you know, he's a good dues-paying Republican, grew up in a Mormon family, went on a Mormon mission. He's, you know, this frumpy little white guy, your typical DHS analyst, I think. He was the source of all this furor, and he's still shaking his head over the whole thing because it clearly set back the ability of law enforcement to really address the wave that he knew was coming. And he had analyzed all the data that there were plenty of good reasons for them to issue that bulletin. And, it was all based on the data they were seeing. But they got screamed at as being, well, they were trying to smear our veterans and stuff like that. And we had a laugh over this. Pat Robertson attacked them and suggested that whoever was the author of that bulletin, well, I would say he had questionable sexuality.
What? Hi. Well, this is the same Pat Robertson said 9/11 happened because of lesbians, though, right?
So that's right.
take it, hit it, and pass it, right? It's just, you know.
Crazy grandpa.
Yeah. God almighty. But there, so whatever remnant was left of any interest in trying to keep tabs on the on domestic right-wing terrorism in the United States was further hamstrung, I guess.
Yeah,
I remember when the Trump regime changed countering violent extremism to countering Islamic extremism, which proves your point that, gosh, if it's got a brown guy with a Muslim sounding name, Well, law enforcement will be Johnny on the spot on that. But if it's a, you know, if it's a guy with a with an ordinary Scots-Irish borderer kind of like Timothy McVeigh, you know, we're just going to let him slide under the radar. And one of the and I think one of the best manifestations of that, David, lies in the charges that have been placed against James Fields even as we speak. Having had a cup of coffee in law school, I couldn't resist going and looking up the Virginia Code, the relevant portions of the Virginia Code in regard to domestic terrorism and murder. Because, as you know, James Fields has been charged with second-degree murder. So there seems to be no question on the part of the prosecutor in this case, and law enforcement in Charlottesville in particular, that this is murder. I mean, a lot of times with a vehicular homicide, ah, gosh, it may be manslaughter, right?
Right.
But no, they had no problem finding murder. But they charged second degree, not premeditated capital murder.
Well, they're just holding him on that. I wouldn't read too much into that, Bob. That's just they've got a charge that they're holding him on while they assess exactly what they're actually going to charge him with, and that's a fairly common practice in law enforcement. So, I wouldn't read too much into that.
I hope
what they're actually charging him with.
I hope you're right, but having read the statutes. And you know, one, you know how it is with the criminal statute. One refers to another, refers to another, you know, and you wind up having to drill down through multiple layers. One of the things with capital murder, and that's why I focused on the fact that they had no problem reaching the idea that it was murder, not manslaughter.
Right.
It says specifically, it makes specifically a reference to terrorism, domestic terrorism. Because that's an automatic. So the problem they're having, it appears, if one looks at these statutes, the problem they're having is trying to get to the point where they themselves call it domestic terrorism.
Sure. Well, I'm not sure what is going on in Virginia, but I was very heartened that, you know, DHS chief, or I'm sorry, National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster did call it domestic terrorism yesterday. And so, you know, there are some responsible parties that are going to be dealing with this, and hopefully we'll see the best. I, having been around this stuff for a long time, I kind of hate to prejudge before we actually see how it plays out. But what I will say is certainly that prior to any of this, the Trump administration has done nothing but behave as though the only terrorist threat that Americans face is that of radical Islamists. In fact, you'll recall that Trump used in his campaign the charge that, you know, what was it? Anybody who can't say radical Islamist terrorism isn't fit to run this country and that sort of thing. Anyone who can't say the name of the threat can't deal with it. You know, that was one of his campaign shticks. And yet he can't seem to ever bring himself to say radical right-wing terrorism.
Don't you think that has a little bit to do with the people with whom he has surrounded himself? Steve Bannon, for instance, still has a job.
Oh, yeah, I think it has a lot to do. I think it has a lot to do with his own perspectives. Look, I mean, the all sides, or, you know, from all sides, hate from all sides remark was clearly something that came off the top of his head. And this is, and that's the real Trump. He really believes, believes in his heart of hearts that the radical left hates in exactly the same way that the radical right does, and that they're just two sides of the same coin, and so on and so forth, except that the radical right is maybe on his side, so he won't criticize them as much. And when they all get together and create horrible scenes, then he can just say, oh, all this hate just has to stop, right? And that's all he's done. I mean, you know, he's been pussyfooting around with the radical right since before. You know, when two guys beat up a Latino man there in Boston back early in the campaign, and then said, yeah, we did this because of Trump. And he was asked about it. He said, oh, well, that's really terrible. I disavow that. And then he said, oh, but at the same time, I really understand that there's all this anger out there and people are really angry and blah, blah, you know, and basically went on to rationalize it.
I think we would do a bit of a disservice, David, if we do not also note that that is not something that is exclusive to Donald Trump. You're mentioning that incident reminds me of when John Cornyn a few years back, when there were homicidal right-wing threats against the life of a federal judge, said, well, now I don't condone threats like this, but I sure do understand why people would make them.
Yeah, yeah, well, and that apparently was the line of thought the other morning on Fox and Friends when they were discussing Charlottesville. So,
is there anything to understand in this? In this bloody petulant notion that these white wingers have that somehow they're under attack. I mean, is there any realistic basis for it at all? I mean, taking down a statue of Robert E. Lee is somehow going to shorten their penis or something? I got nothing here.
It's taking away their heritage.
Heritage, not hate, Dave.
That's right. No. Well, as you know, and of course, then you get into all the arguments about, well, they're trying to erase history. And I point out that actually what they're erasing is falsehoods and lies, because these monuments are nothing but, you know, they are a form of falsification of history, because they're actually anti-history, because they are all about depicting the Confederacy as a noble cause. And let's be honest, that is a lie. Confederacy was not a noble cause. It was about slavery. And these monuments are all about how they were about something, anything other than slavery. And no, I'm sorry. Confederacy was about slavery.
Right.
And
like you, I was in the Deep South as this was happening. And so I drove by a lot of little teeny tiny county seats with courthouses. And the eponymous statue of the Confederate soldier veteran. He's not any particular veteran. He's not, you know, Jubilation T. Cornpone, who saved all the white ladies of Macomb County. It's a generic. And I'm not offering just. It's a remembrance of the people who went and died. Okay.
Yeah.
You can go to Germany and you can see the same thing from World War I and World War II. Not a statue of Hermann Göring, but a statue of people in coal scuttle helmets who died for a terrible cause. And, you know, I can almost make an argument for, well, okay, because over in Ripley, West Virginia, in Jackson County, there's an identical statue, and it's dedicated to the men who fought in the GAR, the Grand Army of the Republic.
Right.
It's the same guy with slightly different dress. But the thing is, the statues of Lee and Stonewall Jackson, et cetera, those things were not put up in the, you know, for instance, the statue of Lee wasn't put up when Lee died.
Right.
Okay. Those things were put up as a backlash, a white lash reaction to Reconstruction.
Yeah.
Just like the rise of the usage of the Confederate battle flag. You know, Confederate veterans didn't march home under that flag.
Yeah.
It was resurrected.
Most of these monuments were actually erected in the early 20th century and, you know, early 1900s and 1920s, somewhat as part of this attempt to do this whole revisionist history of what the Confederacy was about.
The Lost Cause.
The Lost Cause stuff, the Lost Cause history that, you know, was played out in Birth of a Nation and Gone with the Wind and all those others. And, I mean, if you go to... Now, there were no Confederacy monuments in Atlanta when I was there, but I know when I was in Decatur, which is a very nearby suburb of Atlanta, there's an obelisk there in the town square that is a monument to the Confederacy, and it has all these inscriptions around the bottom about how, well, what these men fought and died for was, you know, states' rights and blah, 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 and a noble cause. And yeah, and it was all this lost cause stuff. And, you know, and that's the thing. Read the inscriptions around these monuments and you get a pretty clear idea of what their intent actually is. And certainly the Lee Monument in Charlottesville fits in that category. It was actually put up, I believe, even later during the Civil Rights era. And was definitely one of those things like the revival of the Dixie flag, which was a way of it was a response to a reaction against Brown v. Board and the civil rights movement. So, you know, and those are just that's a historical fact.
Right. Exactly.
That's what actually happened.
Yeah. So. And it goes. And so nobody's erasing any history. I mean, an honest history of we've gone from talking about neo-Nazis to talking about neo-Confederates, but they're kind of the same people, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. 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 No, in fact, well, that's part of what is so fascinating about the alt-right, because it's become this wellspring around which all of these various formerly disparate far-right movements have been able to congeal. And, you know, with Trump as sort of the leader, is seen very much as our fearless leader, you know, and they call him that. You know, there's a reason they were marching down the streets in Charlottesville chanting Heil Trump. A lot of these guys are former. For instance, Brad Griffin, the editor of Occidental Dissent, very popular alt-right website, is very closely associated. He came up through the League of the South, and he's married to Gordon Baum's daughter, the founder of the Council of Conservative Citizens, and is considered more or less the person who's likely to receive inherit Baum's legacy. And he's a prominent alt writer. So yeah, neo-Confederates, neo-Nazis, they're all coming together under this banner.
But one other thing, I think that there is something to be noted. Tell me if I'm wrong. This was a planned thing in Charlottesville. Unite the right. And the fact that you've got people from Berkeley, from Washington State, from Nevada. I mean, that's a long way
Ohio.
To go.
Notably, importantly, from Ohio.
James Fields is actually a Kentuckian.
Right, but there was another guy there. One of his compatriots was also a kid from Cincinnati, I think. They flew in from all over the country. It was a big deal. It was a huge deal for them. And we knew this at SPLC. We tried, you know, we reported on it. And in fact, I did the very earliest SPLC report on Unite the Right and its organizer, a guy named Jason Kessler. We certainly knew it was coming. And we tried to warn people it was going to be ugly. So.
Well, I tell you what, it seems like a really big trip for some 20-year-old kid who lives in his mom's basement to be able to make. I mean, I've even asked the question, you know, how's this 20-year-old kid, James Fields, got a Dodge Challenger? I mean, they ain't cheap.
Yeah.
So.
Good question, and he washed out of the Army, so I have no idea where he got his money.
There's much more here than meets the eye, I suspect, and I really appreciate the work you're doing. Now, I went, of course, and looked before I got you on the air. Alt America, is that available now, or is it yet to come out?
Pre-order.
It's coming in.
Yeah. It is. Its pub date is October 17th.
Do you have, we've sort of laid out the factual groundwork for where they came from, what they think, what they're up to, maybe even what they want. Do you have any prescriptions for how to put an end to this? Because as you noted, this is a Pandora's box that is not easily closed.
Yeah, no, I think as I was saying, I would never put any hope from any kind of top-down thing. This is something that we Americans as citizens are going to have to confront. We have to confront it at our dinner tables. We have to confront it within our families. And we have to learn how to do it in a way that is both firm and empathetic, I think.
You can't. Let me ask you this: you can't unfurl a Hakenkreuz flag in downtown Dusseldorf.
Right.
It's against the law.
Right. Right.
There's no general understanding that modern Germany is somehow wanting in freedom as a result of that.
Right. No. I don't think so, but. You know, we all hold the First Amendment pretty sacred, and I think there's good reason for that. So, you know, that's the difference between us and Germany. And
but is there a demarcation, David, between okay, you want to sit on the internet in mom's basement and type about your white European heritage and how you feel like you're being rubbed out while you rub one off? I mean, we know how these people are. So fine, but when you show up with body armor, and as I think Terry McAuliffe said, or maybe the chief of police in Charlottesville, I can't remember whom, when you show up better armed than the police,
yeah,
haven't you crossed a line that there should be some way of legally dealing with?
Yeah. No, they were one of the reasons apparently Charlottesville police were hesitant to act, at least so they claimed, was that these militiamen were better armed, and that this is the 3%ers that we're talking about here. These guys are better armed than their own officers, and yeah, they pack AR-15s, they pack all kinds. They've got and these guys are real gun nuts, a lot of them, so they've got some really high powered stuff that they're carrying around. Probably with huge magazines, and I don't know anybody who thinks that's going to end well. Certainly, I reached a kind of critical point when I was writing this book where I was actually going, you know, this shit actually scares me.
Well, it does, and there's an intersection, David. Yeah. There's an intersection between say. The NRA policies of the past 20 years and this. And let's not make any bones about it. You're not going to hear Dana Lush take to the air and condemn these people. I haven't seen it yet. I just got home off the road, but I've been reading a little as I could. I haven't seen any NRA denunciation of all this open carry, but this open carry that led to all of this is a direct result of stuff that the National Rifle Association advocates. So there's an intersectionality there that I think has to be addressed. And I frankly, in the coverage I've seen, I haven't seen that going on. But the larger question then becomes, taking our aforementioned aggrieved white guy in his mom's basement, when he's talking about how he's going to be rubbed out, that's one thing. But when he says, and in order to keep from being rubbed out, let's all bring our guns and threaten civil order in Charlottesville.
Yeah.
At that point in time, does our tender and broad interpretation of the First Amendment do we not need to step back for a minute and sort of remember that it's illegal to yell fire in a crowded theater?
Yeah. Well, I know. We've restricted. And this is, you bring up a really interesting point, because what has happened in court rulings on the First Amendment is that threatening language generically falls under First Amendment protected speech. You have to actually make a very specific threat of a person in their, you know, in their body, you know, I want you to go kill somebody at X and X a time at X and X a place before it will be considered non-protected speech. And I'm not, yeah, I think we maybe should reconsider some of that. Certainly I'm very uncomfortable, you know, and I've been reading this seditious talk and this really hateful speech for decades now. And it's reaching such a feverish point that I think we need to really assess, you know, how we deal with it as a society.
And that's a tough one in a model in the sort of model that we have, where we let the courts do the interpreting, that there's a sword that has two very sharp edges here.
Yeah, and genuinely, I really do cherish free speech. I cherish open debate, but when one side chooses to engage that debate by making threatening references and suggesting people are going to die and maybe should die for their beliefs on the other side, then I think that, you know, that's not a debate anymore.
Yeah, no, that's a war of words that's moving toward war of bullets.
Yeah.
And these people in Charlottesville, let's remember, were organized. You know, they organized in phalanges, you know, in phalanxes, like the Greek military style, and they were ordering retreat and, you know, wheel right and all of the stuff that they do when they go and play militia on weekends. They seem very earnest would any of them have been upset had gunfire been exchanged?
Oh, no, I think they actually were hoping for it.
And so the question becomes, you know, you talked about the Antifa people figuring out that they're being trolled. The other side of this is, you know, do you just let them march and carry their guns and hope for the best?
Boy, I don't know. I don't know how you stop the demonstrations from happening. My own favorite solution comes from a counter protest that I saw back in 2006 in Olympia, Washington, National Socialist Movement. The goose stepping neo Nazis who like to wear, you know, the brown shirts and uniforms and black boots and swastika armbands and wave swastika flags, skinheads and what have you, held a march on the Capitol steps in Olympia, and they were met by a large crowd of counter protesters. As you can imagine, Olympia is a home of Evergreen State College and pretty liberal place. And but these protesters, they came out instead of the usual, you know, black masked Antifa, whatever have you, approach. They came out in clown costumes and Groucho masks and basically sat and made fun of the Nazis all day, basically mooned them all day. Yeah. And it was hilarious because they basically, you know, the effect that it had was it humiliated these guys instead of, you know, feeding them the violence and anger that they thrive on. And they were just apoplectic, just red faced with rage. It was pretty hilarious. And in the meantime, on the other side, everybody had a grand time. I mean, it was actually one of the most fun protests I've ever been to because everybody was busy making fun of these guys, and they were coming up with really creative ways to do it. So it was really hilarious, and everybody went home feeling good, except for the Nazis, whose organization broke apart within the year. So, yeah, I would say that was the most effective counter protest I ever saw, and I wish we would kind of take that spirit up. Let's not fight them. Let's humiliate them, because that's what they deserve. That's the only thing they deserve. They don't deserve our anger. They don't deserve our hate, because they're
beneath. They deserve our derision, our mockery.
Yeah.
Our laughter.
Yeah. Anger and hate is too good for them.
And it is also consumptive. I mean, you know, this may sound like we're the two of us are getting a little bit kumbaya, but it's real. and some of this stuff goes back to Dr. King. If you try to meet their violence with your own violence, it's over, isn't it?
Yep. Well, with Nazis especially, or fascists. See, I'm not easy. Not all these guys are Nazis. Not all these guys are fascists or even neo-Confederates. But they are what I would clearly say is this is a proto-fascist movement. And it's if you understand the history of fascism, you know that you'll can identify that these guys are essentially in the third phase of fascist development, which is the power acquisition phase. And the key to their ability to gain traction in those phases has always been their ability to provoke violence on the left and make themselves into martyrs of supposed leftist violence, right? I mean, that was what the Horst Wessellied was, right? You know, the Nazi hymn to the young man, Horst Wessel, who was martyred by the dirty communists in the street fighting between the brown shirts and communists in the late 1920s. It was a tribute to him, and he became this Nazi hero. And, you know, and if you look back at the propaganda of that era, it was full of these posters of, you know, the poor martyred brown shirt being carried off by his brave comrades. But they're going to keep fighting on against those dirty, violent commies. You know, very clever stuff. And, you know, I'm afraid we're just repeating it again, so we can't.
Well, going forward, then, I would say that a big part of this is remaining alert and aware of what's going on. You mentioned the writing that you do for the Southern Poverty Law Center. Tell people how they can where they can go for that, how they can follow it, so that they can stay abreast of this.
Sure. Well, I write for Hate Watch, the SPLC blog, and we post daily. I'm actually the guy in charge of the Hate Watch headlines, which do post daily every day, and that's basically a summary of headlines from around the nation. But yeah, I also obviously write posts for them. I'm today writing a post about the Sunday Alt-Right event in Seattle, which should be up tomorrow. I'm very proud to be part. To be working with the colleagues that I do at the SPLC. They're really top-notch, honest journalists who do really great work. And, I'm very proud to be associated with them.
Well, I go and I read quite frequently. And, of course, your book comes out in the fall. It is on pre-order. Again, the title... I'm sorry, let me get it. Alt America, The Rise of the Radical Right in the Age of Trump. I think, I have a feeling people are going to be a lot more interested in this book. Not that they weren't interested in the first place, but there's a hunger to understand this, David.
Yeah. No, I think there is. I hope so. You know, I mean, honestly, my previously best-selling book was my last one about orcas. So,
and you have a real passion for them, and
yeah,
I've learned a lot myself just following you over on Facebook and following you on Twitter.
But it's a sideline. I mean, you know, I knew when Trump came up that I was going to have to write this book, and Bob, that I wrote two books that basically predicted all this.
Yeah,
you know, The Eliminationists and Over the Cliff. They were both books are out of print now. Actually, no, Routledge has The Eliminationists, so you can get The Eliminationists in a new edition through Amazon or through Routledge. And but Over the Cliff went out of print, and both of those books basically said that, you know, we were heading right down this path and warned of proto-fascism. But I warned of it back in 1999, you know, my book on the militia movement in the Northwest. I said, you know, if we're not careful, we're going to have this essentially proto-fascist movement growing in rural America because we're not paying any attention to it and think it's just something that's happening to a handful of poor folks on the fringe and in the sticks. You know, it's a much bigger deal than that. And now it obviously is. So.
Well, David Nywert, I really do appreciate you being willing to come on. I reached out to you earlier in the day, and you were very generous with your time. I wish you the absolute best going forward, and I hope you can help more and more people understand the nature of the threat we face, because it is a real threat, and it might look like a bunch of privileged, pissed off white boys right now, but that has a way history shows us of spreading out of tavernas and beer halls into the streets and getting traction, and you don't want that once it gets there. So thank you very, very much, and please, you know, I watch you on Facebook and Twitter, and
sure, you're doing the Lord's work there in West Virginia, Bob, so you just keep it up. You know, you're reaching the folks who have good hearts and good minds, and that's what counts.
All right. Well, David, thank you very kindly, and I'll let you get back to it, because you've still got some Monday left, and I'll bet you got some writing left to do.
I do have some writing left to do, so hopefully you'll see it tomorrow.
All right. Take care, David. Bye now.
All right. Thanks. Bye-bye.
David Nywert from over at SPLC, Southern Poverty Law Center. He manages their Hate Watch headlines. If you want to keep up with right-wing hate, which is a really gross thing to say, but if you want to know what these evil bastards are doing, there is no better source than David Nywert. And watch, I'll try to remind us. I'm going to keep up with it. You can go to Amazon.com right now and pre-order Alt America: The Rise of the Radical Right in the Age of Trump. I highly recommend that pre-order. And I'll go ahead and remind, because people write and say, "Hey Bob, what was that address again?" When you go to do anything at Amazon, if you will type in smile.amazon.com, you can then nominate Coal River Mountain Watch, Coal River Mountain Watch, and Coal River Mountain Watch will get a small percentage of every purchase you make at Amazon. Just remember, smile.amazon.com, and you can also be part of the process, that part of the struggle for essential human rights and human dignity and human health in Appalachia. We've got a lot to talk about this evening, a whole lot to talk about. And that being the case, I'm going to take a little break. I'll go ahead and put out the reminder again. We've got $100 in challenges courtesy of Dr. John and Tom in the Bay Area on the table. Big thanks going out to Bill. Bill knocked off half of one of those challenges, so we've got $75 to go to meet those challenges, and another $200 to go after that, just to, so that we're not in a hole come Wednesday. I've got a note from Steve, a member of the fraternity of Steve. We usually hear from Steve in China, but Steve is down where I was last week. Subject line, got to get out more often, I guess. Of course, you don't need to talk to experts or go around thinking you're some sort of particularly insightful person to know that the country is deep into the first stages of a new civil war. No, I started calling it a cold civil war several years ago. I'm in Gulfport, Mississippi right now. I passed through there the other day. And had a conversation with a retired African-American gentleman this afternoon at the Walmart, no less. I was in that Walmart, son of a gun. I go to these places because that's where people are, and I'm always willing to strike up a conversation with just about anyone. Common sense, after all, is truth. And the real people, young or old, know what's happening, and that it is no surprise that it's coming into the supreme ugliness right now. We all saw the pot boil for 8 long years. 2 things came up in this casual chat. The Civil War is here. It's real. It is all about powerful white folks who can't accept a changing world. I was glad I stopped to chat, and we also agreed to one other thing. This generation of young people are savvy and angry. They're not going to accept a world of racism, hatred, and intolerance. It is going to be a terrible and bloody battle. Regards, Steve, on the Mississippi Gulf Coast. One hopes that it doesn't come to that, but when we start asking questions about how thoroughly police and military forces are infiltrated, one has to, one has, You can't just sit back and say, yeah, well, you know, I mean, these things happen. Because Charlottesville was not just a thing that happened. It was orchestrated and it was organized, it was anticipated, and it was probably foremostly desired. Further, to understand, I haven't heard anybody else say this, but I'm convinced of it, or else I wouldn't. You cannot talk about Charlottesville without talking about the NRA, the most powerful, politically connected, wealthy, domestic terrorism organization in the United States. Without the NRA, without their godforsaken open carry campaign, the police would not have felt like they were outgunned, and they would not have run away. They might have actually protected and served instead of running away. I have said for years that the NRA has an ulterior anti-American motive, and that motive is to destroy civil governance such as we have and reduce us to a cannibalistic lone wolf state in which civil war on a sort of prosaic domestic basis of everyday violence is the norm. Just as plain as I can as I can express it. Got a note from Clarity saying, my right-wing friend, who I think has a mind, just posted on Facebook, the KKK is the same if you include Black Lives Matter as a terror org. I guess being black is scary AF, and the stats are all lies about the police. Post casually mentioned some group speaking kill the pigs. I guess this is why Black Lives Matter is nothing but bad. And if you're white, the police are unimpeachable. The Trump regime is just bringing law and order to the inner cities via rural patriots. This is just not enough to sway the Trumpansies locally. They buy the lines about MAGA if the blacks get a chain and a beat down for protesting. Also, the left is the fascists. Liberalism shoved down these good old boys' throats. And what is that but the further expansion of the concept of false equivalency, false duality, bullshit binaries, with which we deal on a nearly daily basis? Hey, thanks, Mike in Cascadia. Jumped in. Half of the challenges are taken care of, so that's a big help. Thank you, Mike. Confederate flag went up on the state house in South Carolina in 1961, not 1861. That's from David in South Carolina, Stan. And Rusty, I appreciate you letting me know, but low volume. If I push it any higher, I'm going to get emails saying that it's unlistenable. So that's just one of the things that we have going on here. I mean, let's see. Okay, that's one little skosh forward on one of the things that does all this. By the way, the stress line is out of commission right now, so all telephony will have to come through either 304-574-8178. Or it'll have to come through Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn. But like I said, we're going to take a little break because there is a ton, and I do mean a ton, to talk about. The phones are already ringing, and I want to get to, as many calls as we possibly can. So let me sort of start over and let me retool a little bit. And see what, well, you know, see how things play out in terms of people wanting to engage in conversation. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is the Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid, and we will get it all going again in just a minute. Rusty says the audio just perked up a little bit. Well, that little tweak might have been what we needed. We shall see. All right, back in a couple. I'm Bob Kincaid. 14 minutes past the hour. Hour and 14 minutes into this Monday broadcast. I think we can take the more in as read, where that's concerned. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. It is the 14th day of August 2017, my first evening back after a week away that you guys gave me. You guys, and thanks to everybody who helped make that possible. Thank you so very much. I can't list everybody. I hope you know who you are. It was tremendously helpful just to sort of get away and clear my head for a little bit. But, you know, and maybe I'll talk about it a little more later. You know, you say clear your head, but your head doesn't really clear. Because I went back down to my old stomping grounds. The whole trip began with a funeral and a lot of memories, a lot of tears. And there's nothing quite like a wander through the South to get you to get you thinking about you know, our national problems. Because the South is our national problem. But don't be going and starting to feel all superior or anything if you're not in the South. Because that's sort of, no, that ain't going to work either. Let's run over and check in with our buddy, the Angry Indian, who I suspect is chomping at the bit. Hey, Angry.
Hey, my man.
How are you?
Not well.
No.
Not well. There's Nazis in town, and the police seem to be working with them. Well, let me correct that. Doesn't seem to be. They are working with them. I mean, we had a police chief here, official, who was putting up pro-Nazi signs in a local park here. And when he was suspended over it, he, you know, filed a grievance, went to court, and won, and was given his back pay and an apology because he had a right to his free speech. We're talking about an organization that put people into ovens. We're talking about a state organization that is responsible for at least 12 million deaths. We're talking about a state agency that you know, frankly, was supported by the United States, not its government, but by the money here, talking about the Bush family, talking about the DuPont family, talking about the Avro Hamrin mine, talking about Ford Motor Company. You know, they were okay with the Nazis. They did, you know, they got rid of unions. They were okay with Mussolini. They were okay with Franco. They were okay with Metaxas in Greece, and that's what he sent the CIA to make sure that he stayed in power.
Yeah, so you mentioned Italy, and I can't help remembering that fat dead Tony Scalia's daddy was head of the pro Mussolini organization in the United States. And just saying, no, we've had more than a dalliance with fascism over the entirety of its developmental history. And it's no surprise to me that it's coming back, but like you, most people on our side of the discussion, we are goddamned well not going to sit around silent while they boil out of their beer halls, because, and I understand what David Nywert was getting at about mocking them and ridiculing them and laughing at them. I agree. They need that because they are clownish, but they are also violent, and it's the violence where we have to start trying to figure out some answers. And I'm getting more and more how to say, I mean, I'm a practitioner of free speech. I am a beneficiary of the First Amendment. Everyone who calls into this program or sends an email or a tweet or a Facebook or post or whatever, all are beneficiaries of the First Amendment. I therefore cherish it, Angry. But I'm beginning to seriously question the degree to which it has been used to normalize hate.
Well, look, I mean, what's the saying? You have Fox News is one, MSNBC is another, CBS News, I believe it was an executive of CBS. He said, I personally think that Trump is a jerk, he tells the shareholders, but he's good for business. So we're going to let him go on, and we're going to put him on as much as possible. And while he was complaining about the media, that's all the fuck they talked about. You know, Bernie Sanders got support. He was, filling places to the point where people were outside and crowd shouting or whatever the fuck they call it, you know, crowd repeating what was being said inside so that people outside were informed about what was going on inside, wasn't reported except by, democracynow.org, which is pretty mainstream. You talked about it. Malloy talked about it. All of the, I hate this. Say this, but you got the left-wing independent media that's on the internet because there is no print press any goddamn more. And you had the fringe left that talked about this. CBS, MSNBC, we used to just be NB fucking C. You know, all of the mainstream corporate news agencies refused to talk about this. All they talked about was Trump. And then they tried to pretend as if, oh, well, we didn't have any hand in what the fuck was going on. Because I want to go back to the left a bit. Now, I respect David. You know, I mean, David and I actually, I doubt if he remembers this because this is when blogging was new. But we actually used to send each other information a long fucking time ago. I'm going back a long time ago. And, I agree with him on a lot. But one of the things that I have to point out, though, you know, this laughing at a fucking Nazi doesn't mean any goddamn thing. And I know that a lot of liberals, progressive people in the United States, and I'm just saying this, white folks, you know, think that, okay, well, we just laugh at these Nazis and mock them, that somehow that's going to, you know, make change. Well, you know, I have to tell, you know, people who have not studied German history in terms of how it relates to Hitler and what came before him. They did laugh at him. They laughed at Hitler every fucking day. He was a fool to a lot of fucking people. Was not respected by the vast majority of fucking Germans. He did not win an overwhelming, you know, majority of the fucking vote. You know, he was not supported by the vast majority of fucking people, especially not in Berlin and not in Munich. But if you went to Coburg, if you went to, you know, a lot of the smaller towns, he had support.
You mean the German hillbillies supported him angry? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I'm not saying it like that, but
kind of the way the hillbillies support Trump. Here, now?
I'm not saying hillbilly.
No, I am. No, I am.
You know, but yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was the folks who were not used to living with people who were different than them. It was the folks who were not very educated past a certain level. It was the folks who were not very literate. They didn't read it was just not part of their daily thing. They didn't do it. And they were used to the people that they were used to. They were used to the lifestyles that they were used to. And the big city scared them. They would, frighten their children that the word pig would get them if they went to Berlin, that the homosexuals would get at them if they went to Munich and what have you. So these were the people who pretty much supported. Matter of fact, since you and I are history buffs, let's talk about the Duke of Saxe-Coburg, right? A member of the British royal family who is dispatched by Queen Victoria to fill a hole for the fucking, European royal families in the town of Coburg. He was the first member of the fucking, European elite that gave his fucking tacit support to Hitler. And it was after that that everybody fucking ran around him. And then the next mayor of Coburg, this little fucking nothing town that pretty much all of the royal families fucking come from, they can trace their bloodlines to. They still do not have Jews that live in that town. They were the first fucking town in Germany to declare themselves Jewish free, Judenfrei, right? Because I have family that died over there, right? Judenfrei, right? So, motherfucking, let's really have a discussion. You know, we can continue to laugh at these fuckers if we want to. We can laugh at people who are talking about killing entire fucking populations to folks that don't match up to their goddamn sense of fucking humanity or their sense of politics, because some of them matter of fact, these alt-right motherfuckers that consider themselves to be so fucking intellectual, all of these Richard Spencer, Andrew Anglin smug motherfuckers, they're quick to point out that the SS, not the Nazi Party, of course, because they don't say that, but that the SS, which was the fucking military arm, the intelligence arm of the motherfucking Nazi Party, was a fucking multiracial force. They had SS units in India. They had fascism is still big in India. Look at Modi right now, right? They have fucking, you know, European Bosnians who were Muslims that were with them. They had an English motherfucking regiment. They had an Irish goddamn contingent. You know, so, you know, they will point out, you know, little fucking things like this and get seriously fucking stupid black folks to support them. And why am I saying that? Because there was a handful of black guys that were out there wearing fucking cosplay bullshit, you know, Captain America nonsense. And there's a couple on YouTube
tiki
that are supporting
torches,
this
God
book.
Almighty, tiki torches.
Yeah, but you know, the whole, but Brother Bob, if you and I were sitting down with a beer, Hennessy, and a blunt, I would tell you what I have fucking seen over my three goddamn decades fucking organizing and fighting against these motherfuckers. When I was young, before I got crippled, I was out there doing fucking direct action. I got the fucking scars to prove it, right? I used to fight these motherfuckers. This is not new. This battle that you saw in Charlottesville, just like the one that went down in Sacramento, this shit used to happen all over the fucking East Coast. All over the goddamn East Coast. Washington, D.C., Philly, where I was.
I want to take a minute with that, Angry, because it is so important here. When the cops turned and ran, they empowered the next. Not that they didn't empower that Charlottesville, they empowered the next Charlottesville.
I'm gonna tell you something.
Go ahead.
No. What I was say was, we got cell phones now. We got the internet. We have a lot that we didn't have back in the 80s. And when we used to roll with these motherfuckers, okay, the police used to do one of two motherfucking things. They either stood there and watched it, or they did just what the fuck you're talking about. They would turn and run. I've seen this in three goddamn occasions in three incidents that I was involved with back in the goddamn day where the police did not fucking support us. We were attacked by these motherfuckers. If you go to Democracy Now, you will see the video. They attacked people. You have statements from folks all over the goddamn place that the police were being pushed. Matter of fact, even D. Ray McKesson, you know, a lot of people are slamming him because of what has fucked up with Black Lives Matter, you know, in terms of trying to, you know, do an organization, which I'm not going to talk about that right now. But he's got some video out here, and he's not the only one, of the police were actually being assaulted by these fucking neo-Nazis. And the police didn't do a goddamn thing but go after the anti-racist protesters.
Hold on just a minute. I understand what you're saying, Angry. But I think, because I'm aware of some of this stuff, too. I think this may be, this, I look at this historically differently. You see it as you have just described it. But what empowered the same sort of forces that we're seeing now in 1861 was the fact that they won some initial skirmishes. Then they thought they were an army. Then they were an army. Then there was war.
This is what I'm getting to. We used to have street battles with them all the time. And every now and again, local media might talk about it because, you know, somebody went to the hospital, which is usually when they reported something, or if there was an arrest of more than two people. Generally, there was gang violence all across the motherfucking East Coast, you know, for a lot of goddamn reasons. You had bikers, you had all kinds of fucking shit. The neo-Nazi fucking thing was not paid any attention to by the news media until they started attacking Jewish synagogues. But there were anti-racists that were out there fighting them, and the news media never reported it, and there was no internet in which to fucking get this information out. Now, the underground press in which I was writing for at that time, the print press, you know, the mimeographs, right? You know, we were able to get that information out, but to whom? you know, the major papers were not going to report what the fuck we were talking about. 50 Nazis show up in Newark, New Jersey, talking about we're going to wipe out drugs, even though they're the ones that were pushing the heroin in the black community in the first goddamn place. They were using black people to fucking sell it through the local La Cosa Nostra. This is a documented goddamn fact, but they blamed the black community for this. Then they started blaming the Indian community or the South Asian community. A group came around called the Dot Busters, you know, talking about the, you know, in reference to the Bindi, and they started beating people up, claiming they were doing this to stop the drug trade. You know, when we confronted them about this, the police came after us. The community came after us. The city council came after us. This is not new. None of this is new. The fact that the police allowed themselves to be assaulted by neo-Nazis and then turn around and arrest and start abusing the, and allow.
Well, okay. Yeah, okay. So time out real quick. Since when the police turned on their heels and ran, okay?
Like in
So since when does intimidating the police with weapons and with firearms and other weapons, since when is that not a crime?
Exactly. If you're a black guy
who doesn't put his arms behind his back fast enough, you're going to be charged with obstructing an officer in the performance of his duties.
Yep.
Now, there's a Twitter handle out there. I'm sure you've seen it. It's called Yes, You're Racist.
Yeah.
And they have done they have done hard work identifying all of these precious little snowflake mama's boys with their goddamn fade hair, Richard Spencer fade haircuts. They've put names to every one of them, or nearly every one of them. Why have they not been charged with obstructing an officer? Because if you make the police turn and run, the police with all their tear gas and their tasers and their clubs and their pistols and their shotguns and their bean bags and their, you get the, their flashbangs, and if you have intimidated them to the point of them turning and running, and you have prevented them from maintaining public order, how have you not committed the offense of obstructing an officer in the performance of his legal duty? And why are there not arrest warrants out for every last goddamn one of them? Now, with all due respect, Angry, that's not a Jeff Sessions question. That's a Charlottesville PD question. That is a Virginia State Police question. That is a prosecuting attorney of whatever county that is question.
You're technically right, but the bottom line is Jeff Sessions is supposed to represent law and order in the United States. This is what he says when he's talking about going after immigrants. This is what he says when he's going after white people being discriminated against through, you know, affirmative action. This is what he says when he wants to go after my fucking 86-year-old neighbor who uses marijuana as a fucking health issue. And even if she decided to smoke the shit recreationally, she's 86 in America. That's her goddamn business. You know, this is what he goes after. In the meantime, Bannon is sitting in the White House. Stephen Miller is sitting in the fucking White House. Ivanka is sitting there ignoring every goddamn thing. Her husband's going up, fucking around in the Middle East, fucking things up. Trump is trying to get everybody to look at anything other than the fact that he's been selling his ass out to Russia. And I'm still going back to what I was talking about before. I agree with you completely. But what I'm trying to say is that this bullshit has been happening in waves and it's never really fucking stopped. There's people who have been fighting against this shit for fucking decades. And what makes things different today about what happened in Charlottesville is the fact that it's on film that the cops were running. The situations that I was involved in, there was nothing but a fucking what? A goddamn VHS fucking camcorder.
Right.
If anybody even had that shit. So, you know, when that used to happen, nobody knew about it. So the public was not aware of this. Now these fuckers are emboldened. They're they're emboldened. They're on the neo-Nazi side saying they didn't talk about us. He said that everybody was fucked up in this. They didn't specify us. He's still on our side. He's still on our side. So because of this, somebody fucking grabbed that motherfucker and said, look, man, you better specify these motherfuckers or you're going to politically fucking get this. Because Merkel is now talking about you. Turkey is now talking about you. Iran is now talking about you. And don't think the North Korea propagandists are not going to fucking use this shit.
Haven't even gotten to North Korea. Nope. Yeah, I understand.
Right? So, you know, you're lynching Negroes in America. This is what the Khrushchev people were saying. Remember that one?
Oh, yeah. Because it was true. Because it was true.
You know, you got a gulag. Well, you're fucking lynching people in Virginia. So what the fuck? What the fuck? You know, you beat up a Chinese man on the street in New York. What the fuck? What are you talking about, man? Well, Castro was a dictator. Well, what the fuck? Castro feeds his people. You got people starving to goddamn death in Ohio. So what the fuck? What the fuck? This shit has always been here, but we can't laugh at these goddamn people. We need to take them fucking seriously. Because the thing is, for the most part, their victims have been non-white people.
Well, and their
victims of.
When I began to see the details of the death of Heather Heyer, you'll forgive me if the first person I thought of wasn't Viola Liuzzo. Remember, I know you remember who she was. A white woman murdered by the Klan down Dallas County, Alabama, at the time of the Edmund Pettus Bridge incident. She went to that protest. She was a paralegal. She went to that protest because she felt like it was the right thing to do, that they weren't to be laughed at. And she got run over and killed for her troubles. And people who want to stand up in these situations do need to know this ain't street theater. These fuckers are dangerous. Nope. They have homicidal intent.
And let's point out something too. Hey, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but let's point out something too, because I respect law enforcement. I don't respect fucked up law enforcement. Now, you talked about, you know, the cops running. I don't see anything other than scorn from the goddamn far right on Twitter in terms of the two officers that died on their way to that goddamn, scene. Two officers were killed because of the actions of the goddamn neo-Nazis. And I don't hear one motherfucking Blue Lives Matter, not one All Lives Matter.
Is that the helicopter incident?
Yes. They were doing their fucking job. They were just doing their jobs. Were they bigots? I don't fucking know. I'm not making that assumption. Until some information comes out like that, I'm not going to make that assumption. These were two men that went to fucking work that figured they were going to go home to their fucking families after this shift.
Yeah, and absolutely. And alongside that angry this, Donald Trump wasted no goddamn time tweeting out his condolences when somebody drove a car through a crowd in France was obvious that because the perpetrator was somebody that he knew he could make political hay on.
See,
if a brown person, if a Muslim does something, commits vehicular homicide and creates a terrorist and engages in terrorism that way, Trump and the rest of the right wing, and frankly, the rest of the world, has no trouble saying, "Ha, look, terrorism." On the other hand, we get, well, you know, we're investigating whether it might be terrorism if it's a white guy. You can't ignore this stuff. It's real. It's privilege. And you know, one of those places where I do take issue with what David said is that I think I really do think, you know, if you're just holding a guy on a charge to see what's going to shake out,
start with the stuff that matters. I'm an opponent of the death penalty, okay? But capital murder is on their books, and capital murder is premeditated murder. It is also, according to the statutes of Virginia, murder that is perpetrated during a terrorist act. And the idea that they're not sure, did he just take a wrong turn? And he became disoriented? Bullshit. We've got evidence from his high school teacher saying, "Oh yeah, he sat around talking about how he Hitler was his hero."
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so
there's so many fuck like that, man.
I go back. I know, and people get sick of it. I'm sorry. I think about John Brown. John Brown was tried by the Commonwealth of Virginia and hanged by Robert E. Lee, no less, on a charge of treason. Not a federal charge of treason, but a charge of treason against the state of Virginia. Now, how can a man who is not a citizen of a state commit treason against it? And that's a fact. So, I mean, there are layers upon layers of problems that attend this. And there's no heat being brought to bear that I can see. There's no heat being brought to bear on the prosecutor, and precious little heat being brought on the police. And there is absolutely no conversation. There's no conversation at all taking place about whether or not we actually misunderstand. I'm not asking for the First Amendment to be changed. I'm asking, do we actually misunderstand what the First Amendment means? But I mean,
No. See, the thing is, you know, again, you and I have talked about this before, and this, I feel like I'm redundant. But like you say, you know, a lot of folks kind of need to be told several motherfucking times before it trickles down. You know, these fuckers know that they're full of shit. I argue with people not because I'm out here looking for fucking arguments. It's just when I fucking smell bullshit, I go for the goddamn jugular. My mother didn't like it. My wife doesn't fucking like it. My producer doesn't fucking like it. Nobody around me likes it. You know, I call myself out too for the fucking record, all right? I call out bullshit, and fucking people come up with all kinds of goddamn things, and it's like, well, why do you believe that? Well, that's my opinion. I'm not debating that. I'm asking you why what are you basing your opinion on? You're telling me I don't have an opinion. No, that's not what I said. I'm asking because I'm trying to understand where you're coming from. What is your opinion based on? They know that they're full of shit, Brother Bob. They know it. Remember, I told you, I used to do magic, you know, until my hands got bad, right? I used to do magic. And you need a certain level of dexterity to do magic when I wasn't able to do it anymore. Well, that was the end of my little bullshit career, you know. But the bottom fucking line about magic is 70% you want to fool people all the fucking time. And when you understand how tricks are really done, you know, you just don't look at things the same way. I also was trained in advertising, so I understand what the fuck is going on when these motherfuckers use certain headlines, when they use certain fucking text. I'm also a little hack goddamn writer like you on the motherfucking internet. So it's like, I look at this shit. These people know that they're full of shit. It's not a matter of, they're really confused. You might have a couple of stupid old ladies who really don't know any goddamn fucking thing because they're so, you know, cloistered that they're not exposed to anything. But, you know, let's get real. Anybody in the 21st fucking century that has any fucking education beyond the sixth goddamn grade in the United States knows that the Nazis were responsible for death and goddamn destruction. And there is not one former fucking fascist state that you can point to that has not been fucked up by its leadership. Not one. Spain was goddamn near fucking destroyed. The only reason it didn't get destroyed after fucking Franco's fucking passing was because no one had any more bricks to rebuild any goddamn thing. They were glad that he was fucking gone. The Falangists are still goddamn there. The Muslim Brotherhood, which is probably the first original fucking fascist organization in fucking modern history, right? I've written about this in efforts for fucking fascism. It's still goddamn here. This shit has never gone away. Ultra-conservative and ultra-left fucking politics have never gone away. And that's the only place where the left and the right meet is at this fucking point. But even then, there was a fucking difference. I have to remind people, Stalin was a motherfucking bastard. He was a murderous motherfucker. He and Beria were killers. And they, yeah, they weren't about freedom. They were not communists. They were totalitarians. But even they motherfucking realized before when Neville Chamberlain needs to do whatever the fuck he wants to do in Europe and shit, and you're leaving us left the fuck open. You know, well, because they don't teach history any goddamn more in school. And I asked my friends' children, who was the first president? You know, I get Lincoln 8 out of 10 fucking times, Brother Bob.
Jesus.
As somebody who used to teach reading comprehension to adults, it makes me want to fucking cry. I don't want to get up out of bed in the morning knowing this. That in 27 fucking teen, I'm speaking to a 16-year-old that is telling me that Lincoln was the first fucking president and catching an attitude with me because I'm saying that you're wrong. We have an arrogance of stupidity and ignorance here that is fucking overwhelming. You know, when Sarah Palin was encouraging parents to give their children junk food because people were trying to move them away from this shit. And folks were saying that, yeah, I like Sarah Palin. I'm going to vote for her because my kid, if he wants to eat Twinkies, this was a real conversation I had. If my kid wants to eat Twinkies and he wants to be overweight and, you know, that's his business. And I'm like, well, hey, how about when that shit, you know, stresses the fucking social system because his health is bad? You're a communist, she said to me. I've known this woman for fucking years. This was her attitude. This was her attitude. So, you know, what do we do? You know, what do we do with this type of shit? What do we do? We have Janice D'Souza talking about ethnic nationalism as a left-wing idea. Go look at Media Matters. Watching. You know, Mindy yeah. Collins' brother, he's supporting Trump talking about affirmative action is bullshit because I told them I was a black American and they just believed me and gave me everything that I asked for. So, you know, white people don't have a chance. These are people of color. So what's to do?
Yeah, I understand. You know,
laugh? There's nothing about this shit.
No, it needs to be. Look, you can counter protest till hell freezes over.
That's right.
and that's one of the problems. I mean, this is one of those places where we find the nexus or the intersection. I don't know what word I want here, but. Okay, great. We're going to counter-protest the fascists. Maybe we'll moon them. maybe the Antifa will go after them with clubs, whatever. The Antifa were much more disorganized, of course, than the fascists were. They always are.
Mm-hmm.
But...
It used to be that way, though.
but protest is... Well, it was damn well like that in Spain, but the protests will not stop this. They will not be driven back behind the baseboards like the cockroaches they are by protest or counter-protest. Candlelight vigils won't do it. The only thing that will do it is active suppression by... not the government, but by we the people, our government. And we still do not have, Angry, a consensus that these fuckers are wrong, that they're evil.
Yeah, again,
because even again. Over here on our side, uh-huh. you get... Well, you know, the First Amendment, we've got to tolerate their hate speech. That's what makes us great as America.
And what else? because we talked about this before. I've written about this. What else? Because I would get pats on the back when I talk about, hey, you know, black folks, sometimes we support, especially when I get into debates about Uncle Tom, Thomas Sowell, human lawn jockey number 3 on my list of human lawn jockeys, 1 to 10. Michael Steele is number 1. But he balances between it's between Michael Steele and Ben Carson. I go back and forth depending on how the news is in the week. But Thomas Sowell is really good for blaming black people for black failure. And then when he couldn't do that after about, 10, 15 years, then he started blaming the Scots-Irish in Appalachia for why black people have bad manners and have gangs and keep having kids out of wedlock and shit. This really happened, right? So I get into these fucking things with black conservatives. I get into this bullshit. And, we get into this thing where, okay, well, these guys are only supporting me because of this and that. And it's like, yeah, so why don't you just come right out and motherfucking say it? This is a fucking reality, but the blame is bullshit. A lot of black folks are supporting R. fucking Kelly, even, with this, new revelation of his goddamn sex slave cult fucking thing going.
Oh, I know. Right? But I want to turn it back. I want to, people.
I am turning it back. What I'm trying to say is black folks tend to support black folks because they're black. Because the idea is if he's fucked up, if you see him as fucked up, then I'm fucked up too. And it's the same goddamn thing with the white community. If this is a white guy, I'm really fucking hard pressed to condemn this motherfucker completely. I'll say that he's fucked up and I try to fucking deflect as much as possible. But we all do the same goddamn thing when it comes to that. Republicans fucking do it all the goddamn time. The DNC doesn't fucking do it, though. They'll leave their members hanging out the fucking dry. But the RNC will defend each other to a fucking hilt unless there's no fucking reason not to, or unless you're black. Because Charles Payne just got hit with sex charges and they dropped him like a fucking bad habit. They're supporting this other motherfucker who recently got fucking charged with some sexual shit, but they dropped Charles Payne like a motherfucking bad habit.
People want answers, okay? People want to know how we can make this not happen anymore.
Well, people want to feel comfortable.
And if that's the case, I want to propose some. One of the favorite bromides of the NRA is we don't need new more gun laws. What we need to do is enforce the laws what's on the books. All right? Good. Let's take that model. If you show up to a protest carrying a shield, carrying a gun, carrying a club. If you show up to a protest with a tiki torch that can be used, and everybody, ha ha, dumbass Nazis, tiki torches, goddamn. Guess what? That's a Molotov cocktail in a fucking hurry. Okay? If you show up with anything that could be used as an offensive weapon, arrest their ass for interfering, for obstructing an officer. It works real good if you don't jump real high when they say froggy, so it ought to work equally well against a goddamn Nazi. Use the tools we have, and we won't have to have a bunch of precious hand-holding and kumbaya singing about how we won't be free anymore if the Nazis don't get to hate on everybody and threaten everybody assert their precious white privilege. Use the laws we got, and we can begin to get somewhere. But you have to have prosecutors and you have to have police who are willing to do that.
Okay. But you got Lon Ahrens here, who was the victim of Mika Johnson. These motherfuckers that were down in Charlotte, here in Portland, up in goddamn Seattle and shit last night where there was some controversy. Matter of fact, there was violence from the police in terms of them going after the anti-fascist protesters. We've had this bullshit going on, and we continue to fucking talk about this, and there's laws in the books, but Lon Ahrens, he was killed by Mika Johnson, who decided on his own that he was going to take his U.S. Army training and go out there and strike one for the Afro black man, whatever the fuck his idea of that was supposed to be. It turns out that when he showed up to a lot of black power fucking meetings and organizations, they asked, they told him to take a fucking hike because they thought that he was too fucking extreme. So he went out and he did his own goddamn thing. Now, it turns out that one of the men that he killed on arms was a white supremacist fucking police officer. I can't get anybody to come on my show and goddamn talk about that. No one in mainstream media wants to talk about that. There's been exposés about white supremacist organizations in the LAPD, in the San Francisco Police Department, in the Seattle Police Department, in the Portland Police Department, in the Newark Police Department. I can't think of one goddamn police agency in this country that has not at some point, you know, been forced to admit due to a court action that they're dealing with neo-Nazis on the force that they don't know anything, they don't know what to do with. In fact, and I challenged anybody to fucking challenge me on this. Anybody can Google this bullshit. The FBI is reluctant to share information, you know, from these fusion centers with local police departments anymore because they found out that they were giving the information to the fucking white supremacist neo-Nazi gangs that deal dope. The DEA and the FBI are just like, hey, we can't trust the local fucking police because a bunch of them are white supremacists. And they give this bullshit to their fucking homies to prevent them from fucking being caught. Not in their Nazi violence, but in their drug dealing. So one would have to assume that they also do this with their Nazi fucking violence. Why is this not being discussed? Two officers from Florida were But a few years ago, were fired from their positions for being members of the KKK. And anybody who's ever done prison time in the East Coast can tell you, the majority of the correction officers wear their Klan rings to work.
I think you and I are both making clear that the problem is probably deeper than most anything that can be said in the for-profit media or is being said. People like David Nywert have been warning for years. You've been warning for years. I've been talking about it for years. But, you know, how much coverage does it get in the for-profit media? You know, the answer is, Angry, it doesn't. But I tell you what, Angry, the phone has been ringing off the hook since you got on. So I know you've engendered a lot of conversation. I've enjoyed it. I appreciate it. And thanks for being part of the conversation on my first night back, man. I really do. I appreciate it.
Yeah, and I'm glad you're right, even though I don't like hearing you cough, though. But, you know, hey, I want to hear the voices to come up behind this. It was, you know, hella good to hear David. It's been a long time. And, hey, everybody, again, I know you're tired of hearing this from me, but I know we're all poor, but Bob needs your support. So let's dig deep if we can. Cough up some pennies. Let's help this man out. All right?
Thank you, Angry. Take care. Bye now. Our buddy, the Angry Indian. For those of you who are listening at headon.live, cool, you haven't missed a lick. I don't know if White Rose is streaming or not. If you're listening via White Rose on TuneIn or any other platform, please let me know. So, because I show sending, but I'm hearing that it may not it may not be up. So I don't know. And thanks to Steve from Georgia Stan to let me know that it was down. So I want to send out thanks before we go any further. I want to send out thanks to everybody who jumped in to meet Tom and Dr. John's challenges. Those were met. Thank you very kindly in that process to George. And thank you very kindly to Mitch. Thank you, Rusty. And of course, thanks for getting us started to Bill. And I have good news. We can actually do what we need to do this evening. There is for the remainder of the program, the next hour, there's a $100 challenge on the table, courtesy of Laborman. Now, and that'll cover tonight and tomorrow night, and hopefully. We won't be in a hole come Wednesday. Thanks, Les, for letting me know it's back up on TuneIn. Great. Wonderful. Apparently the burp was, apparently White Rose did come back. I'm seeing a little bit of buffering here and there. I got no idea why. Thanks, Robert in Australia. You dropped for a minute, but you're now back on TuneIn. Thank you. Marty says the HQ stream appears to still be down, but the LQ stream is going. Thank you. Thank you, Marty. So we've got a $100 challenge on the table, 10 at 10, 1, 4 at 25, 2 at 50, 1 at 100, that sort of thing. Thank you very kindly, Laborman, for making the challenge and helping us get to where we need to be. And I really want to thank, and by the way, thank you to Mike and Cascadia as well. I want to get to a place where, and because I don't want to, you know, and then we, you know, and then we had a grilled cheese sandwich at the Whistle Stop Cafe. No. There might be some food porn involved. I'd like to tell you about where I went and what I did and what I saw and what I thought. But not just yet. Not just yet. There's a lot of conversation yet to be had. But I, one little observation, and I want to come back to this, because I saw a lot of things along these lines when, please, understand, and you do, I know, the Nazis that were marching in Charlottesville are Trump's base. I've come back to this time and time again. Mila Yiannopoulos and Steve Bannon said that the alt-white is more than 50% of the GOP base. I believe them. I take them at their word. There's too much evidence for it not to be. For it not to be true. You know, when Trump, and when Trump came to Huntington, West Virginia a week ago last Thursday, before that happened, there was somebody calling for people to run over protesters in the streets. Nothing happened. Not in Huntington. But this is obviously, running over people in the streets is obviously a new form of assault. It is a new attack strategy by the Trump Nazi right. Oh, and by the way, law enforcement in West Virginia did next to nothing about that threat. I think we're probably going to be seeing more of this. Because it works. And because there's little inclination to stop it. No inclination to stop it on the part of the Trump regime. But lo and behold, in the middle of all of this, I looked over on my Twitter feed, and I saw a whole string of messages yesterday as I was driving home, a whole string of messages from a Sparkle Pony talking about how Hillary was the worst candidate ever to run for president. And I thought, oh, Jesus, really? The Nazis are on the march and you, precious Sparkle Pony, are still out there talking about Hillary? God almighty! But if we're going to sit here and continue to litigate the 2016 Democratic primary and the general election, I'd like to point out something. Remember when everybody had a shit hemorrhage because Hillary Clinton said that half of Donald Trump's supporters she put in the basket of deplorables? Remember that? I do. Well, if we're going to talk about how awful she was, I think it's only fair to talk about how right she was, too. Because she was. She was right. Charlottesville proved it. Trump's supporters are goddamn Because the Klan is deplorable. Because neo-Nazis are deplorable. So if you want to heap criticism on somebody, by God, have the common decency to point out when they are correct. Because Hillary was correct. Half of Trump's base. Just like Milo and Bannon said, is alt-white. I saw some wit who said, I hope historians in the distant future trying to analyze this hellish little phase we went through can understand how dangerous Hillary's emails were. Yeah, me too. Me too. And in the midst of the conniption over North Korea that we're barely even talking about now, there was another little something. And I'm trying to find it now because I want to make sure that we get the language. That I get the language absolutely correct. There it is. Where to hide if a nuke goes off in your area? Hide at the polling place. Where you voted third party because you refused to vote for the lesser of two evils. God damn right! Subject line 50% of the base. Steve in New York says, I completely disagree. I think it's more like 75% or more. I think polling bears that out. Let's no longer call them sparkle farts. How about sparkle dunce? And what a true statement. The stupid. It hurts us. Yeah. So, maybe bear that in mind. Because, hey, this is another one of those moments. And no, by God, I'm not going to let go of it. Because you don't let go of stupid. You reinforce how stupid it was until people understand they did a stupid thing. I'm not going to let go of it. We need unity. We damn sure do. Oh, okay. Well, all right. Brother Deacon Asa says, I disagree with you on that, Brother Bob. She wasn't right in that at this point in time, knowing what we know, 100% of Trump supporters are deplorable. Hillary was, in fact, incorrect. But her emails! Ooh, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, Bruga Bruga. Can we focus, or do we on this side just have a terminal case of attention deficit disorder? I mean, I couldn't believe it. I was getting tweeted at about Hillary in the middle of what smelled an awful lot like a battle. Oh, but... I don't know. Maybe we won't. And, you know, maybe... maybe all those people who risked their lives and the ones who didn't come back trying to fight and destroy fascism, maybe we can just look up and say, hey, we've had second thoughts. We thought it over. It was in vain. We should have just gone ahead and let the fascists be who they're going to be. Because if you're still going on about Hillary with this shit going on, that's what you're saying. Plain and simple. If you're still tweeting about the fucking DNC while Nazis are marching, that's what you're saying. Plain and simple. Looks like we're having some pretty significant White Rose Society problems this evening. Don't know why, but we are. Please stand by, as the saying goes. Okay, 11 minutes past the hour. Challenge on the table to finish fundraising, courtesy of Labor Man. 49 minutes to raise $100. I hate doing this. I hate fundraising talk. I despise it. If we had 340 more people subscribing at $10 a month over at patreon.com/Bob Kincaid, I could stop talking about this sort of thing mostly. But we don't. So we need to raise $100 in 49 minutes. Meanwhile, over on Skype, from San Diego, Scott. Hey, Scott.
Hello, Bob.
How are you?
I couldn't be better. I'm as fine as frog hair split four ways with a broad axe, and I'd like to chop off a chunk for you. Okay? First of all, a comment, sort of an update, rephrasing of Hillary's comment about the deplorables and how many of them there are. To paraphrase Roy Scheider, I believe that's how his name is said, of Jaws fame, the film, we're going to have to get a bigger basket because they are out there, baby. They're coming out from beneath rocks and behind.
Well, see, if Hillary wasn't so corrupt and so crooked, she wouldn't have said basket. She would have said 55-gallon drum.
No, bigger than that. Bigger. Dumpsters.
Sea-going tanker ship.
Yeah, I was going to say an old Kaiser. What were they called? Liberty ships? One of the whole.
Yeah, they tended to crack up at sea. Let's stay. But, yeah, I get the point.
Yeah.
But,
yeah,
of course, we're still going to talk about, oh, goddamn Hillary. Oh, she stole the primary from poor little Bernie Sanders by getting 3 million more votes than he did. What corruption. Oh, Jesus.
Well, they've taken the people that do that, the unicorn chasing sparkle fart ponies, basically took a page out of Trump's book. Take the easy way out whenever you can. In other words, don't talk about what the problem is. Keep rehashing your old, decrepit, out-of-date, barely usable talking points, you know? But this program never ceases to amaze me and inform my sensibilities. I have found that I have yet again something in common with Angry Indian. I, too, used to do magic as a kid. And I wish this wasn't radio, because I could astound you with some of my little feats of...
I'd have quarters coming out of places I don't want quarters to come out of. Yes, I understand.
Exactly. Prestidigitation coming out of your... Well, anyway. But how do I sound, by the way? Over the weekend, I got an email from Amazon Prime Now, and they said, here's what we'll do, Bunky. We'll give you $10 off your first order, and we'll get it to you in 2 hours or less. So I availed myself of that opportunity to get some new earbuds, and I'm using them now. So I hope I'm
sound
coming
pretty. No, you sound pretty good.
Wonderful, wonderful. That was the intention. Now, here's the good news for you that I'm going to chop a chunk off and send your way.
Yeah, because last we spoke, you had turned all a little ray of doom on us. I remember.
I believe the exact quote was, "We're all screwed."
and how little you knew how well you spoke.
Yeah. Well, I figure if you keep saying it, you're going to be right eventually. But anyway, I got confirmation today that I'll be able to start my subscription to the Horn situation this month. There was a question about whether I'd be able to in August, but it looks like I will be able to. So once that's firmly established, it'll be on its way through the magic PayPal.
I appreciate it. And for people who use the now, if you subscribe, if you do a subscription, like, you know, recurring monthly, via what's on the website right now, you know, where you click the little box, make this a recurring monthly, that'll come out on the same day every month. But if it makes it easier for people, if I understand the Patreon thing correctly, if you sign up for a subscription at Patreon between now and next month, it only comes out, or maybe I'm getting this wrong. People who have used the Patreon thing need to tell me if they've been charged. But it was my understanding it was only going to happen on the fifth day of the month.
Okay.
So it's possible that, like, if you subscribe now, you won't even see any money go away until September the 5th.
Okay. Well, you've got that link on the Horn website, right?
I don't think so. It's just patreon.com/Bob Kincaid.
Okay, because I didn't look into it yet because I wasn't quite ready to do it, but I'll look into it and decide on which the best method is for me.
Yeah, I mean, if you just want to say, I want it to come out on this day of the month, then doing the straight-up PayPal thing. If you just want it to happen, like, maybe, and again, I don't know for sure because it's all news to me. I haven't seen anything come from them, nothing.
Well, chances are I'll probably do the PayPal since I've already got a couple of account payments with them already. And I know how it works, and it's easy to set up. But I'll look into both of them.
Yeah, and really, I didn't mean to turn this into an extended fundraising thing.
No, that's
There's
right.
too much going on this evening.
I think it's worthwhile that you have the funds to do it, do the show every day, because, and also get away. By the way, when you do your travelogue, I hope you take a page out of Jackie Vernon's old comedy routine and have your clicker so you can show slides on the radio.
On the radio, yeah.
click, click. Yeah. Here's Agnes.
I did tweet a number of photos of Agnes and Facebooked a number of photos of Agnes, and I even Instagrammed a couple of things and pictures of really, really big, beautiful rivers and some beach and some birds. I thought of Punky as I was taking pictures down at Dauphin Island, because there were a whole bunch of seagulls just kind of hanging out on the rail there at the estuarium. I guess waiting for somebody to, you know, they get acclimated to people sitting around on beaches just throwing bread in the air to watch them lose their minds. I personally don't agree with that. They're not bread-eating birds. But then there's so many of them that when they fly away, it's like, well, hell, look, it's an Alfred Hitchcock movie. Because you just know that, you know, those little beaks could really, really tear at some flesh. Because that's what they're for.
Well, I thought of
Punky.
I was at Mission Beach once. Oh, God, about 10 years ago. And this is at McDonald's there because I wanted a late lunch. So I got a burger and a little pack of fries. And I'm sitting on the seawall. And damned if a seagull didn't fly over to the seawall, hop on over, and try to grab as many of those fries as he possibly could with that big old beak of his. And I said, well, I was going to give you some. You don't have to get grabby, you know.
But, don't have to be an anyway. Asshole about it, right?
Yeah. Well, speaking of Punky, you will be also happy to know that over the weekend I got the living room about 88% set up. which involved moving his cage over and shoving the love seat over where his cage used to be. So there's kind of an L shape in one corner of the room, and then Punky, and then the entertainment center, and then a table, and then a bookcase in the other corner, and a chair and a lamp, and a big old dining table in the front part of the living room. And there's still a lot of settling in to be done. But I wanted to touch on something that you and Angry talked about in your conversation earlier, and that is, how do we stop more of these people from cropping up? And when I say these people, I mean neo-Nazis and KKKers and, you know, other malcontents and angry white folks. And the only solution that I can get a fix on at this point is I figured some years ago that sooner or later, as the demographics began to work against these people, the old fuckers would die off. But unfortunately, as we see with young Mr. Fields, there's a new crop of them coming up. Now, what is he, 20 years old?
Yeah.
And that bastard, if somehow he is convicted and there's no death penalty involved, I would not trade places with that poor schlub for anything, because you figure there's only two ways to go. Either he's going to have a long-term obligation as somebody's prison bitch, or he will rapidly be fitted for a toe tag. I don't see any other outcome.
Well, he's not facing the death penalty.
Well, there you go then.
I'm inclined to, because I guess suspicious and questioning by nature. A guy kills somebody in the middle of an act of terrorism, and somehow the prosecutor and the cops can't seem to. Oh gosh, but damn it, you know, he's a white guy. I mean, it was sure. Well, let's say we're not sure it was terrorism yet. That's what we'll do. So we can't charge capital murder.
How stupid do you have to be not to see that that's exactly what it is? Of course, now we are talking about my home state, and there's still a fair number of stupid people in Virginia, so some of them actually get onto jury duty, so who the hell knows? But anyway, go ahead with your thought.
Well, no, I mean, that's just, there's privilege, and there's privilege, and there's institutional privilege, and there's personal, and there's just like there's institutional racism and personal racism.
But as far as my methodology for ridding ourselves of as many of these malcontents as possible, demographics and aging are going to work in our favor. But what do we have to insert? What do we need to insert into the conversation which will help prevent young, misguided people from not growing up to be old, misguided people? And that seems to be the crux of one method of dealing with these people, because they're always going to be some of them, because that's the nature of human beings. There are irretrievably stupid people who believe any goddamn thing.
Well, I mean, there's you've got a valid point in there. There's lots of stories about this shit arising in high schools and junior high schools, and these are the same people that we see stories about engaging in bullying of gay people, trans people, brown people, black people, women in general. Okay. And I go back to something that my kid's middle school teacher used to say: it all begins in the home.
And it does.
So I'm. But the question is, why? Why does this stuff take hold in high schools? I mean, but there's so many whys. Scott, I mean, I keep coming back to this cop in Springfield, Massachusetts. Ha, 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 love this. Maybe people shouldn't block roads. That was what a cop from Springfield, Massachusetts said on Facebook after Heather Heyer was murdered.
And it's worth remembering, Springfield, Massachusetts, if you don't have your map handy, is way north of the proverbial Mason-Dixon line. That's up in the fucking cradle of liberty, so-called.
Oh, absolutely.
But
it follows a pattern, because Scott, after he got caught, he said, "Never would I want someone to get murdered. I am not a racist and don't believe in what any of those protesters are doing. I'm a good man who made a stupid comment and would just like to be left alone." Well, no, fucker. You don't get to be left alone now because you held up your swastika.
Now, this is not the guy that was tattooed with all the...
No. This is a live cop, not a dead one.
Jesus.
And meanwhile, police commissioner for Springfield, Massachusetts said, "I received notification of this Facebook post earlier today via email from a complainant. The post is purportedly from a Springfield police officer. I took immediate steps to initiate a prompt and thorough internal investigation. If, in fact, this post did originate from an officer employed with the Springfield Police Department, this matter will be reviewed by the Community Police Hearings Board for further action." Oh, good. Well, a Nazi's going to have a review board hearing. I feel so much better now. Fire him. And dare. Fire him and dare the goddamn cop union to say one goddamn word in his defense.
Well, yeah, I was going to mention the cop union because you know that wall of blue will kick right in. And they'll... It's amazing some of the shit that they can try to defend.
So, do you suppose there's going to be a special decoration for the Charlottesville police? It may be a ribbon that's just solid yellow.
Well, I don't know what to make of that. I've only been to Charlottesville once, and this was years ago, and I don't know that much about it other than the University of Virginia is down there. I think that's the name of that school. Was it the one that Jefferson founded?
That's the University of Virginia. Oh, that's Mr. Jefferson's university.
Well, I had sent you a question for your guest in the first hour, and maybe this opens up a door to raise it now. On Friday night, last Friday night, a federal judge ruled in favor of the right-wing Nazi demonstrators. I believe the city of Charlottesville wanted to move the proceedings to a larger, more wide-open venue to better accommodate not only the demonstrators, but the police. But the federal judge put the kibosh on that and said, no, they wanted to do it at this Emancipation Park, or as they call it, the Robert E. Lee Park, which is in a cramped area of town compared to what the city of Charlottesville was proposing. And what role does that play, that action of the federal judge ruling against the city and for the Nazis? That certainly had some bearing on the terrain where all of this vehicular madness happened. And doesn't that judge hold some responsibility? I mean, obviously, he's not psychic. He can't read the future. But he certainly must have a lick of sense. If you're going to be a federal judge, you almost have to. I mean, couldn't he see the intent that the city of Charlottesville had in mind? They didn't want to prevent free speech and expression. They simply wanted it to be in a venue that was safer for all concerned. And I'll bet you it would have been compared with where it all ended up, as we saw on Saturday. And I sent a Think Progress article about the judge's ruling, but I haven't seen anybody comment on what bearing that ruling might have had with how things played out. And you probably haven't given it any much thought either, but it's a curious part of the puzzle. Let's just put it that way.
Well, it is. And there are all kinds of little nuanced details to what happened that we haven't covered yet. But those little details add up to big problems. I read somewhere that the police wanted to move the protest somewhere to, you know, where they could keep people separated better. But you know, the Nazis weren't going to have any of that, And some whatever I read said that maybe a judge intervened to say, no, they've got a right to protest where they want to protest, you know, because of free speech. You know, the focus of their protest was that goddamn statue of Robert E. fucking Lee, that miserable traitor who none of this would be happening if we had just hanged his noble bearded self after the insurrection that he helped lead. And yeah, okay, yeah. So here's a little travel log moment. Toddling around I-10 down in the same area where Steve from China is presently Steve from Gulfport, you know the brown signs on the interstate that that denote historic places?
Yeah.
Well, there's a brown sign there. Beauvoir, the home of Jefferson Davis.
Jeez.
To the best of my knowledge, there is not a living descendant of Abraham Lincoln. Jefferson Davis's living descendants are all over the goddamn place. And they're all terribly proud of the stand for freedom and states' rights that Jefferson Davis done stood for. And in fact, the whole South is so proud of Jefferson Davis that one man named his little boy after him, and the general who ordered the first shot fired in the Civil War, and now he is our Attorney General of the new United States of Confederate America, of America. Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions,
yeah.
The third. Three generations of that.
And you're absolutely right that it all goes back to a slightly modified piece of rock that 150 plus years later, the descendants of the Johnny Rebs who fought in that insurrection are trying like hell to preserve that so-called heritage, which is nonsense. I mean, it's, and I had completely forgotten when Trump visited West Virginia not too many days ago that there had been reports of these white people, crazy white people, saying let's run some of them down in the streets, that they certainly seem to have latched on to a methodology that's real big in Europe with another terrorist group, don't you think?
Well, they do, don't they? And look, I mean, is there anybody who will point out that these Nazi bastards have adopted the tactics of ISIS? Hello? Because that's what happened Saturday.
Yeah.
That was a Nazi adopting a terrorist tactic of ISIS. What a pity. We have a hard time understanding that.
That old children's game of one of these things is different from the others. Okay. Then you've got 45, the demented circus peanut posing as president, who the third day after can't seem to get his comments in sync with straight thinking. Are you taking any bets when he may finally get it right in terms of? And they say the first thing you say is your true response. And if that's so, his remarks on Saturday tell us everything we need to know about where he stands on the matter of shaded people and white people.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I have any answers, but I kind of think that some of it will have to do with the older ones are going to die off. That'll kind of take care of itself, hopefully sooner rather than later. But what can we do to keep these youngsters from picking up the tiki torch and the twisted talking points? And that seems to be some of where a solution might be found. And I'll be damned if I know what the answer is. But you and Indian raised it. And it's worth contemplating, God knows, because it's not going away of its own volition. I mean, geez, look at what did that noted political philosopher Red Fox once say? if you can read the handwriting on the wall, you're in the toilet. And that's in a lot of ways where we are. And we had better get busy setting things right, because it ain't going to happen automatically. I mean, we've seen what happens when we throw the automatic pilot switch. Things go batshit crazy in a hurry. And I told you my story about trying to take a Nazi in for show and tell in high school, didn't I?
No. Yes. Yes. Yes.
Okay. My thoughts went back to that more than a few times this past weekend. And I'll give the Reader's Digest version for kids who are hadn't heard that story before. I grew up in a place called Alexandria, Virginia, about 40 or 50 miles north, more or less, of Charlottesville, just outside D.C. Well, in the summer of 71, the school board decided to make the east side of town and west side of town, white and black, mostly high schools, 9th and 10th grade, and make the high school in the center of town 11th and 12th grade, and thereby reach a better balance racially in the city public high school system. And if you saw the Denzel Washington film from 2000, Remember the Titans, some of that story is told in that movie. Well, I was part of that first class at T.C. Williams High School in the 71 to 72 school year. Well, once it was established that the plan would go into effect, the Nazis from George Lincoln Rockwell's old headquarters in nearby Arlington, Virginia, decided to bring their VW micro Nazi hate bus over to Alexandria to the Market Square, where there's a big gathering point for things. And entertainment mostly, but sometimes it was religious or political rallies or gatherings on a Saturday. So a bunch of us from my then high school, George Washington High School, said, well, hey, why don't we go down there and make hooting noises and derisive comments as they're trying to conduct their little rally, and maybe we can piss them off or make them look like the fools that they are, which is what we did. Well, after that, I proposed to my sociology teacher, Mrs. Gibson. I said, what would be the harm in bringing one of these fools in for sociology class? And he could have his say, and it would give us an idea, sociologically speaking, of how somebody gets to become that way. Well, that was shot down in a hurry. But they compromised, and then they armed me with a reel-to-reel tape recorder and questions from the class members to go over to headquarters of the American Nazi Party and interview the head Nazi, which I did. Now, I am going to try to get a copy of that tape because I think it is still in the archives at the school. But that was in the summer, I mean, the school year of 71-72. Close to 50 years ago, okay? And things have radically changed. Youngsters today that are joining up with these idiots don't seem to have a good head on their shoulders, or if it is a good head, it's mostly empty, and it's getting filled with this Nazi nonsense. Again, getting back to the younger generation as maybe the critical place where we can inject some smartness and some common sense as opposed to hatred. But much has changed, and that dismays me because, you know, I kept thinking that as we got closer to where we are now on the great time clock, that we would be doing at least half as much better as we've ended up doing. And that just pisses me off and upsets me no end.
As well it should. As well it should. Scott, I'm glad we got a chance to talk this evening.
Okay, Bob. And once I find out about this this confirmation on the money situation, I will get cracking on that subscription that I promised to do.
Well, I appreciate it, Scott. I really... I genuinely do. And, you know, don't do it if it hurts you.
Well, that's why it has taken so long. I'm at a point finally, praise God and whoever else is listening, that it doesn't hurt. And I encourage all those within the sound of my dulcet tones to go thou and do likewise if you can. So there.
Hear, hear. Hear, hear. Thank you, Scott, and good evening to Punky, who was surprisingly quiet tonight.
He's having his nap. He'll be active later on for the early evening floor show, I'm sure.
Well, tell him I will email him some seagull cheesecake photos.
Oh boy, he'll hardly stand it. Okay, Bob.
Later, bye now.
See ya.
Our buddy Scott calling from San Diego. Yeah. Seagulls. James says in a note, Scott, I guess you've never heard of the Aryan Brotherhood prison gang. Oh, I suspect he has. I suspect he has, but point taken. Clarence with a note, how to stop this madness. Public policy is the only way short of armed revolution. We've had to install a progressive majority government at the local, state, and federal levels. Once that happens, laws and regulations have to pass to ensure that the rise of any anti-democratic movement is put in check immediately. Speech and gun rules need to align with 21st century societal norms. And maybe that's part of the problem, Clarence. A lot of people out there not liking and not wanting to live in the 21st century. A lot of our institutions are 19th, if not 18th century institutions. There's a hell of a load, a lot about the South, that is definitely 18th and 19th century. A lot. A whole lot. And if you pay attention to history as I do, if you love it as I do, it's hard not to see it alive all around you. I mean, goddamn, we've got Comrade Kumquat in the Oval Office, not because of the democratic will of the people. He lost by 3 million votes. He's in the office because of an 18th century artifact of slavery. Every old public building that I saw had some touch of the wickedness of slavery in it. And make no mistake, you know, like David Nywert said, every one of these alt-white institutions, it's just an umbrella. It's a catch-all for every form of white, toxic, hateful, ignorant, bigoted, filthy, disgusting white supremacy. You know, maybe the Nazis hate Jews more than they hate blacks. The Klan hates blacks more than they hate Jews. But they both hate Nazis and Jews and Hispanics. And some of them, maybe even, you know, Catholics. But they all love one thing. They love Trump. And in the 3 days it took him to get around to having somebody write him some vaguely denunciatory words to say of and call it, well, there's thugs. Yeah, they're thugs. They're definitely thugs. In those 3 days of silence said more than anything he said today. And so guess what? He's not going to alienate them. They're going to keep voting for him. And sorry to be a little ray of sunshine, but if some people don't get their heads out of their asses on our side, we're going to get my prediction coming true. we're going to get his second term, or maybe the second term of Mike, or the first term of Mike Pence. We'll get a Republican president in 2020, and we'll get one in 2024 too. Remember, I've got odds out there on Ivanka 2024. You know, that woman put out a tweet over the weekend saying there should be no room in America for blah, blah, blah. Again with the weasel words, should. Should. Yeah, you're right. You're right, Blondie. There shouldn't be room for that in America. But you and your goddamn clan of Hell's Kitchen hillbillies create that room. And why did it take 3 days for Trump to say anything meaningful? Every man is his father's son. And Trump knows his daddy was arrested in 1927, participating in a Klan riot in Jamaica, Queens. And he probably heard those filthy, objectionable words coming out of the filthy gob of his father all his goddamn life. We know that because of the words he uses. My black, describing a black chimpanzee. I want Jews counting my money. Those aren't things you come up with by yourself. It all begins in the home. And what a home he grew up in. Okay, 13 minutes left in the program, and $100 to go. $100 to go to meet Labor Man's challenge. Please don't leave that laying on the table. I implore you. Let's run over to the 305 area code and see what's happening. Hey, welcome to the program.
Scary Jerry, Bob.
Hey, what's happening, man?
I spent all last week cursing you, Bob.
Oh, for going on vacation?
Last week. Yeah, I was like, you can't ever go on vacation again, man. You can't. I'm sorry. I know I was going, it's been 12 years, but you go on vacation, the world goes to shit. Just like this.
You know, I recognize it was my fault, but I can't just sit here chained to the oars either. I mean, after a while. Yeah. But you you understand.
I do. I was looking at the pictures. I was like, he looks remotely happy. He's probably talking to random people about this shit now too, because it was.
Oh, I did. I just stood on the street corners and did my program. Yeah.
I started doing a program last week to just normal people. I go, white people are fighting. Okay, wow. What are we supposed to say about that? I haven't seen white people fighting forever. White people are getting their door kicked in, and there's no drugs involved. In fact, they're rich. That never happens, but that's just normal. They're impaneling grand juries, but that's just normal. Could Russia have given North Korea a bomb? Probably. But that's just normal, too. Where the fuck are we, Bob?
We're up to our eyeballs in some new normal, aren't we?
You know, I was thinking about some two crazy things. I got so much to say. I mean, for one, the last time I talked to you, Bitcoin was $2,200. It's the chaos currency, Bob. It's going to replace the dollar because we don't have anybody driving the dollar anymore. We did the last 8 years. That was part of the war against Russia, strong dollar and low oil prices. Notice oil's ticking back up? Ain't that weird?
Oh, yeah, I got back up here to the hills, and it was $2.26 a gallon when I left. It's $2.39.
It's ticking back up, and all those motherfuckers with that flag in their back window and Trump bumper stickers, I'm gonna love talking to those guys a year from now. And gas is $5, and there's no food. That's the thing. There's droughts everywhere. we're going to have a problem with food next year. I saw a green bee, though. Mother Nature never stops working. Could have been a bee. Could have been a drone. Who the fuck knows? It was a green, though. And it was faster than normal bees. Missed you, Bob. You can't go on vacation anymore.
I'm not going on.
Another 3 hours tonight.
I'm not going on vacation for another while. Although I will warn people now. Agnes and I have our 25th wedding anniversary coming up next May.
Well, y'all got to still do a shirt. No, I'm joking. I'm joking, obviously. But
no, Dave, I'm thinking about things. You know, where we could make some sort of hybrid thing. Maybe I go, because I found just sitting there and having the breeze blow, you know, that sea breeze that always blows right there at the beach, doesn't blow inland. Having that,
I'm on the beach right now, so I got you.
Yeah.
I know.
That's
we should all meet then.
We should all meet and pass
the same joint. Oh my God.
It blows some real negative energy away, and the roar of the surf is cleansing. And so I don't know. Maybe I figure out a way to go down and rent a house at the beach and live there for a month. Work for a week. Take a week off. Work for a week. Take a week off. Or maybe just work mostly all the way through it and take a little bit of time just to walk the damn beach. But it's cleansing, and you know it. It is.
I do. It's the only thing that really keeps me sane. Hey, what are we all doing for that eclipse? That's what, 6 days away now?
It is. It's coming up. I passed through Bowling Green, Kentucky on the way home, Dave. And that's right smack dab in Eclipse Central. Can't get a hotel.
Most of the eclipse over Trump country, actually. Most of the eclipse over Trump country.
And there'll probably be much screaming and madness in it. My favorite, like I said, my favorite eclipse story is the eclipse account in Mark Twain's A Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court. Because I can just imagine all the Trumpansies going, "Oh, the liberals has put out the sun. God, what do we do? Oh, pray to Trump. Pray, pray." I'm being facetious, but still. You can't get a hotel room anywhere in the eclipse band. And every convenience store in the eclipse zone that you walk into is selling eclipse glasses. I kid you not.
Did you know that Jeff Sessions, actually he was just standing there, this was mostly Dutch police, and this is behind the blackboard stuff. You're not going to see this in your news. It took 2 weeks to show up to the news. One of the problems with this country is all the high-grade drugs were cut off about a month and a half ago. So everybody's a bit tense.
I believe that
was kind of on purpose.
We've had the high-grade stuff largely cut off in Appalachia for a while now, Dave, and that's why we've got a heroin fentanyl carfentanil problem.
Well, it's not even fentanyl anymore. It's right to the carfent.
Yeah.
I saw
a headline as I was heading home last night, or yesterday afternoon, that America's binge drinking problem is worse than it's been in 10 years or more, the number of bingers in the United States may actually equal or exceed the entire population of Texas. Which kind of makes me wonder what Texas is doing.
Well, I've been in the nighttime entertainment business forever, the last 10 years. I kind of retired forcibly a couple of weeks ago. I was attacked. A professional boxer attacked me. It wasn't fun. But I wasn't scared, so I'm kind of proud of that. Those liberals are fucking crazy, aren't we? We're not going to start them, but we're not going to back away, are we?
Well, no. That's the thing, you know, just going after it. What do you do? And you know, if I can get back to air tomorrow, or if I can't, we'll do it on Wednesday. But what do you do when you're in one of these confrontation situations? I mean, I've been in a lot of trainings for a lot of protests and stuff, and they teach you about de-escalation skills. But it's hard to de-escalate from somebody who is actively seeking it. See, that's the thing about Charlottesville. They didn't come there armed because they were afraid they would be attacked. They came there armed because they hoped to attack someone.
When Trump started making his noise, we had a red moon. Do you remember that?
Yep. The blood moon that James Hagee kept talking about.
Now we're going to have a full eclipse. I don't know. The stars are aligned, man. When Trump got elected, all the stars were aligned. All the planets were lined up angry over the moon. It looked like the Muslim flag, but, extended. I don't know. You know what I'm going to do? I'm getting some acid, Bob, and I'm going to share it with my friends because everybody needs to chill the fuck out.
Yeah, see, that's my problem. I can't do that because I'm too stressed out. There's no way I could do acid and be okay.
Hey, I'm...
The air would start breathing. The sand would come alive. I mean, it would be good.
And Mother Earth would say hello. But the funny thing is, the funny joke, and I'll let somebody else get in here because I know... Got people want to talk to. It's Scary Jerry, by the way. We've talked, not Dave, but
I thought you said Dave, but Scary Jerry.
Right. I'm calling on your VoIP line and it chopped out. Oh, you're being hacked, by the way. That's why the quality keeps bouncing off and you're dropping streams. And it's some white nationalist shit.
Might very well be.
Anytime it gets really nasty on Trump, you ever notice your signal bounces around? Every single time. You know, if you're talking about the air quality in West Virginia, you're at 128. But you get into Trump, you drop down to the 8s and the 16s. Too many times to be coincidental.
Damn.
I want to talk to you about college football the next time we talk.
Oh, it's time. It's time, isn't it? Yes.
It's I've been waiting. Love you. Love the Horn family. We keep your heads up. That's all you can do. Oh, saw a lightsaber. That's what I'm doing for all this crazy shit. I'm buying a lightsaber. 5-watt laser.
That could be
5-watt laser is offensive. It's not. Yeah. And you don't have to die, but I'm not going to die either, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it does. It does. All right, Jerry, you take care, man.
Take care, man.
Got to get out of here. Later. Don't be a stranger. Scary Jerry. Sorry about that. I don't know. I thought I heard him say Dave, but Scary Jerry. Good to hear from you. And so it's time to wrap it up. The 3 hours have run past. I'm refreshed. If I can get back on the air tomorrow night, if the hearing is over in time, I will. If I can't, I won't. I'll try to tweet. And Facebook. I'll let people know. Big thanks going out to Glenn. Thank you, Glenn. Thank you very kindly to Sharon. That was big help. Thanks very much to Renee, and thank you to, let's see, there was somebody else there. Thank you to Colin. That leaves leaves $30 to go. That leaves $30 to go to meet Laborman's challenge. $30. Can we do that in the next 2 minutes? It'd be great if we could. I'll be back quick as I can. God, I missed you guys. I really, really did. It was nice to get away, but I missed you guys. And I've still got some general observations to make based on what I saw, what I thought. Driving is very good for me. Long-distance driving is very good for me. Because I think they're valid observations. And we'll get to them. There's an epic, massive filibobster coming that may take up the better part of an entire program. Just not tonight. So back quick as I can. Later, y'all. Take care. Thanks for all your help. Thanks to everybody who keeps all of this going. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you very kindly to all-around great guy Steve from Georgia Stan in the chat room who lightsabered lickety-split a little right-wing turd earlier. Thank you. Thank you, Steve. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, Coal River Mountain Watch on Facebook, and at Coal River MTN on Twitter. Remember, you can help out every time you make a purchase at Amazon. Use smile.amazon.com and nominate Coal River Mountain Watch to receive your donations. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.